Right.
Good morning. Today's Daf Baba Basra, Samech Dalad. We started in the very bottom of Samech Yom Amid Beis. We're starting with the words Tashma. Tashma is obviously a continuation of the discussion that the Gemara had yesterday, and it goes back to the statement made by Rav Dimi. If you go back to the middle of yesterday's Daf, the middle of yesterday's second Amud, so you will find Amar Rav Dimi Minar Da. It's right after the two dots. It's five lines from the top of the Amud. Amar Rav Dimi Minar Da, Heman de Mizban Le Beis L'Chavri, a person sells the house to his friend, Afagav de Kosovo, Umka Veruma. And in the contract it says Umka Veruma. Umka, Omek is the depth, and Rome is the height. So basically what you're trying to do is communicate. Buyer and seller trying to communicate to one another. Not only am I selling you the house, but I'm selling you everything that's up and everything that's down. So we can draw a line up, we can draw a line down, and that'll be included part of the sale. So Rav Dimi says that's really insufficient. That's not enough. Sarich lemechtav lei kinilecha mitoham arav ad rambakia. The language of Vumka Veruma is just simply only going to cover the house, nothing more than the house. If, let's say, there's an underground cistern, in order to acquire that, or let's say the rights of the rooftop, you want in order to acquire that, you have to write additional language in the contract. Notably, you have to write Kanilach Metahomara from the depths of the ground ad Rome Riki until the skies. But without writing that, the words Umka Veruma just simply not going to communicate anything other than the house. That's a statement of Rav Dimi, and the Gemara is now going to challenge that statement. Tashma, this is where we're picking it up right at the Gemara on Samach Yom Amud Beis. V'loas Agag Bizman Sheish Lamaka Gavoras. Our Mishnah says that when you sell a house, you do not sell the roof when there is a fence around the roof and the fence is 10 tefachim high. So in other words, we know that a rooftop has to have a makkah. The Torah instructs us that to build a fence around the roof so that nobody falls off the roof and nobody dies prematurely. So when you have such a roof, that is an independent area. It's its own separate entity, and therefore it's not included in the sale. So now the Gemara is going to make what seems to be a very simple diak. Isa kadacha bistama, kani umka veruma. So the Gemara says now, if we're going to assume that generally speaking, by writing the words umka veruma, so you get everything, meaning, unlike what Rav Dimi is saying, meaning what the Gemara right now is doing is using this Mishnah as a proof for Rav Dimi. Let's assume that just in general, Umka Veruma is going to be Kona. Ki gavo asar tfachim ayhavi. So the Gemara says, okay, so now the fence is 10 tfachim high. Mistama, you wrote in the words Umka Veruma. And the fence is 10 tefachim high. So it shouldn't make any difference. It must be, therefore, the default assumption is that Umka Veruma doesn't acquire for you anything other than the house and the roof with the 10 tefach maka around it is the reason why you're not going to be kona is because generally speaking Umka Veruma doesn't do it for you. So Amalei Ravina, so my havelah kevin de gavo asar tefachim chashiv. So the Gemara says, well, the Gemara says maybe not. Maybe what we can argue is that, look, maybe Umka Veruma by itself, it does acquire. Again, the Gemara is just being argumentative right now. In other words, the whole point of bringing this Mishnah is try to prove Rav Dimi. The Gemara is just basically saying, now, not necessarily, doesn't prove Rav Dimi. And it could very well be, the docha of the Gemara is that when the rooftop, even if you say Umka Veruma, and even though normally Umka Veruma does acquire for you, both the ground below, and the rooftop above. However, when the rooftop has a fence that's 10 tefachim around, so then we can make the argument that 10 tefach maka means that the rooftop is really a separate entity. Meaning, of course, it's residential. But because it has its own maka, so therefore, really, it gives it its own separate identity, and it's really independent from the house, and under those circumstances, it's not part of the sale. It has to do with the chashivas that's given to the rooftop as a result of the maka that goes around it. That's what the Gemara is arguing. So again, all we're saying right now is that the Mishnah doesn't necessarily prove nor disprove the position of Rav Dimi. Amalei Ravina leRavashi Tashma. The Gemara now tries to prove it from the following Amarei Shlakish Zosameris. This comes from yesterday's daf. But we were talking about making a statement in the contract that's unnecessary, or to put another word, superfluous. And what does that do? So it gives you an additional right. meaning something that you would have gotten anyway as either a buyer and a seller, and you throw that language into the contract, you're doing it obviously to support and substantiate your position. So, so for example, Hamocher ba'asa chaver v'amalam nashedut al yonashali. So let's say you throw the following language into the contract. I'm selling you the house, but I'm retaining the roof to myself. Now, as we already learned in yesterday's daf and the daf before that, that the roof is already retained. You, when you sell a house, the rooftop is not included part of the sale. And by you writing this into the contract, so obviously what you're doing now is you're trying to strengthen and reinforce your position. How exactly is that position strengthened and reinforced? We said it yesterday, we're saying it again today. So, so you get the duty, you get the rooftop. Now you would have gotten in any way. So what additional benefit did you get when writing this clause into the contract? So the Gemara gives two explanations. Meaning not only do you have the right to the rooftop, but if you want, you can actually have beams extending and protruding outside of the airspace of the rooftop. That is what you get with this extra language in the contract. And Rapapa says, no, you want to build on top of the rooftop, you may do so. Meaning the rooftop is so yours that you can build on top of it. Okay. And now the Gemara is focusing specifically on the Shita of Rav Papa. Rav Papa tells you that by inserting the language of, and I get to retain the rooftop, it gives you the right to build on top of the rooftop. So the Gemara says, so let's start off with the following. Let's say that generally speaking, the word Zumka Varuma does not do anything for you. So, Lamali Amanas. So the Gemara now asks a really simple question. So why did you have to write the words on condition? Meaning, if the general, if the default starting, if the default assumption is that you're going to get the rooftop, and you're going to, I'm sorry, that you're going to retain the rooftop for yourself, and even with the language of Umka Varuma, it's not going to change that matter, like what Rav Dimi was arguing. So then why in the world are you writing a contract? And in the contract it says, you know, I'm selling you the house, Almanas, on the condition that I get to keep the roof. You don't need to say that. It's perfectly unnecessary to say that, considering the fact that you retain the roof. And even when writing the words, Umka Varuma into the contract, that still doesn't change the fact that you get to retain the rooftop. So why are we discussing a scenario in which you have to say Amanas? What is Amanas gaining for you if, in fact, you already get it to begin with? So the Gemara says, Anilei. Amanas, the enough of Hadabanila. So the Gemara says, okay, you know what the Amanas is coming to tell you, or it's coming to introduce to you? The idea that, even that yes, you're right, that in the sale of the house, so I retain the rooftop, and I retain the rights to the rooftop, and even if we wrote in Umka Varuma, like Rav Dimi says, I still retain the rights to the rooftop. What have I gained by saying the words Amanas, by writing in the word Amanas, explains the Gemara. What Amanas does for me is the following. I retain the rooftop. But specifically, this rooftop. If this rooftop were to collapse and cave in, and the owner of the house now were to build a new rooftop, without stipulating anything in the contract, I no longer have the right to the rooftop. Because even though I've retained rights, but I only have retained rights for the rooftop as it currently is. Once it no longer is there, it collapsed, he rebuilt it, so then I don't have the right to the rooftop. By me writing the clause in the contract of Amanas Shidyuta Shali on the condition that the rooftop belongs to me, what you're adding now is that you're going to be gaining access to the rooftop, whether in its current state or even in a future state. I will have the rights to this rooftop. That's what you gain with the words Amanas. And the Gemara says, and this doesn't challenge Rav Dimi's position at all. Rav Dimi is in fact correct that by writing the clause Umka Varuma, you only get the house, you don't get anything above the house. You don't get the cistern below, you don't get the rooftop above. You don't get anything other than the house itself, the house proper. And the only thing what we're discussing over here, the clause that you wrote that I get to retain the rooftop, is an additional benefit that you get to retain this rooftop or another rooftop as well. Adkan. Okay, this last give and take of the Gemara over here, there are many different ways to say it. In fact, if you take a look at the Rashbam at the very end, right before the Mishnah, he says, Yeshitos Acheros, there are a number of other ways to say it over the Gemara. They ain't by Mamish, but the Rashbam says, but I don't really think there's much to them. Anyway, if you want to see Other ways to look at the Gemara. You can see Tosfos over here has a lengthy discussion in terms of other ways to say it. But in the meantime, however, we'll say the Gemara like the Rashbam I just did, and let's continue in the Mishnah. Okay, the Mishnah discusses the following: Lois Abor veLois Ados. Afa Pishikasov Lo Umka Veruma. Right, we quoted this Mishnah yesterday. The Mishnah seems to be very clear. Meaning, it's kind of funny that we had a lengthy discussion in the Gemara, but meanwhile, the Gemara already made this point yesterday. The Mishnah's language is very clear. When I buy a house, I only buy the house. If there's a cistern underneath, some sort of water hole underneath the house, subterranean, I do not acquire that because I only bought the house. Nor do I have access to the rooftop. The rooftop is also retained by the seller. Right now we're focusing on the pit that's below. Lowest abor, lowest adus, you don't get the pit and you don't get the pit. The Gemara later on will ask the simple question of why does the Mishnah have to use the word pit two times? They're both bor and dus, are both pits that are underneath the ground. Okay. The Gemara is going to ask that question. We'll get to that a little bit later on this morning. Afa pishikasav lo umka veruma. Now, you can write the language of umka veruma, and it's not going to help you. You're still not going to get the pit. Vitzarech likach lo derech. Now, here comes an interesting debate in the Mishnah, and it really turns into a fundamental, or at least could turn into a very fundamental machlokas. Now, here's what you just did. You just sold your house. Now there's a pit underneath the house, subterranean to the house. You retain that for yourself. So now you have a water source for yourself that right now is lying below somebody else's house. So that means, how are you going to get to your water source? It means you're going to have to open the front door of somebody else's house, walk through, and help yourself to your water source. Now, knowing that all this was happening in the course of this transaction, so allow me to ask a very simple question. Did you retain the right of access so that you can get to your pit? Or no? Did you not retain the right of access? Now, if you didn't retain the right of access, so how are you going to get there? So, a couple of suggestions, if I may. Number one, you'll fly. Yeah. Somehow you'll float through the air and you'll navigate to get to the pits without having to go through the front door. Okay. Okay. All right. That's not going to work out. More practically speaking, however, what you're going to have to do is you're basically going to have to pay for that right. In other words, understood. My water source is underneath your house, and I sold you the house. The house now becomes yours, and I sold you the house. And if I want to get in, so I'm going to have to pay for it. And that's exactly what Rabbi Akiva says. That's the position of Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah. Rabbi Akiva says that now if I want to get to my water source, so look, I sold the house, and including the sale is I sold him everything, including my right to access. I didn't retain that for myself. And as a result of that, if I want to get to my water source, so I got to either ask him for a favor, or if he's not interested in extending favors, I got to pay for me accessing to my water source. Yes.
Is there an idea that you say it's my water source? You have no right to that water source, do you?
What do you mean? It's still the seller. The seller retained it for himself. Seller only sold the house and did not sell the water source. The water source is now still the seller's. It still remains the seller's.
So I'm saying the problem is not access. It's actually not your water source.
No, it is. What do you mean? You meaning who? You mean the seller.
You're the buyer.
You're the buyer. It's not yours. The Mishnah is coming from the perspective of the seller. The seller now wants to get to his water source. The problem is that the house that once was his no longer is his.
I'm saying that the seller has no right to the water source.
Sure he does. It's his. The water source still belongs to him.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Rabbi Akiva says, fine. That's exactly what's happening now. So if I want to get to my water source, I'm going to have to pay for a derech. I'm going to have to pay for the right of access. And the Chachamim say, no, it's totally unnecessary. Meaning, because when you sold the house, there was an implicit understanding in the sale that, look, I'm only selling you the house. There's a water source over there. You know I need to get there. I know I need to get there. So what I'm retaining from myself is a right of access. Okay, so that's the machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim. And what is the fundamental principle underlying this machlokas? So stay tuned. We're going to be discussing that. Okay, you should know the answer already, but yeah, you should know the answer already. But stay tuned. We're going to discuss that in the Gemara. Derech. And Rabbi Kiva admits to the following. He agrees to the following. Let's say within the contract it's written that you know I'm selling you the house. Yes. And you know that I'm retaining the water source for myself. Now that's unnecessary. Again, it's the same idea that we've expressed already a number of times. Writing that language in the contract is unnecessary. We all know that when you sell a house, you only sell the house, the water source is not included. By you verbally stipulating within the contract that you're retaining the water source for yourself, you're obviously putting that language into the contract in order to put yourself in a better position. What better position can you put yourself in? That you now have rights and access to get to the water source. The extra additional language of the shtar is there to strengthen your position. Okay. Now, let's inverse the case. You have a house, you have a water source underneath the house, and somebody comes knocking on your door saying, look, I want to buy your water source. Great. And so now you're selling your dus, you're selling your bore to somebody else. The house is yours, the house remains yours. You're just selling a water source. Good. Now that you sold them a water source, now he comes knocking on the door. Hi. I'd like to come in. Oh, really? That's interesting. Okay, well, you know it's my house right now, and you obviously can't trespass on my house. Yeah, but you sold me the water source that's underneath. Didn't you understand that I need to get there? So you say, okay, that's very nice. So over here now, when you sell your water source, was included in that sale the right of access. So here we go again. So Rabbi Kiva says, no, he doesn't have to buy a right of access. That was included in the sale of the water source. Meaning, so when you sell somebody a pit within your house, understood within that sale is that included in that sale is not only the water source but access to get to that water source. And the Chachamim say no. You only sold him a water source. How is he going to get there? He's going to have to pay to get there. So Ad Kan Divrei HaMishnah. So we are in the Mishnah discussing the basic idea that a pit and a cistern are not included in the sale of a house. And then the question becomes, when you sell the house to somebody else, do you retain for yourself a access to get to the water source that you retain for yourself? Conversely, the Mishnah also discusses when you sell somebody else your water source and you retain the house for yourself, did you sell them a point of access to get there?
So why are they flipping?
Oh, so Alex pointed out, which is the obvious dilemma. It's not really a dilemma, meaning you'll see there's one common theme that goes with the Rabbi Kiva. There's one common thing going with the Chachamim. And once we give a simple explanation of what's behind these positions, so you'll see that actually they're not flipping. They're actually being very consistent. Okay.
It's interesting about selling the chumetz in the house itself. So you always have to tell them where
the key
is, because if you sell a chumetz in the house, he has to get it
right. Right, right. In other words, without access,
to be approved for the...
Very good. Very good. Right. Right. He quotes a discussion as to whether or not you must identify where in the house the chametz is.
And give it, no, how to get there.
Oh, and permission.
So do the permission.
Permission.
So we put into the contract.
Right,
so
right.
By somebody.
Okay, very good. So stay tuned. We're going to be discussing this very. It's a core issue of the Mishnah, which obviously needs an explanation, and we'll get there. The first thing we're going to do, however, is just run through the Gemara. The first part of the Gemara. The Gemara over here has a really simple question, as I already foreshadowed when we learned the Mishnah. Why mention bor? Why mention dus? It's basically the same thing. So yes, the Ravina v'kakashle haina bor haina dus. You know, the Mishnah likes to streamline as much as possible. The Mishnah is not there to give exposition. And when the Mishnah says the pit's not included, just say one. Say the bor, say the dus. It's the same thing. Haina bor, haina dus. So amale rav tusfa'a l'ravina. So the Gemara says, okay, well, you know there's a difference between a bor and a dus, and that's the following. When it comes to a bor, it's just a hole in the ground, meaning that the ground is really hard, it's bedrock. And in other words, if you want to make a water pit in your house, it's really simple, assuming the ground is hard enough. You dig, you excavate. It's going to obviously take a lot of work and effort to do so. But once you have that hole in the ground, that's it. You fill it with the water and you're good. That's a bor. What is a dus? A dus is where the ground is really soft. Okay, we live in a land, in a state in this country, where the ground is really soft. So you dig in the ground, and what's going to happen is that it's going to, in a matter of, you know, days, hours, weeks, it's going to collapse because the ground is so soft. So if you want to dig a pit in the ground, what we would call a pool here in Florida. So if you want to dig a pit in the ground, and you want that pit to sustain, so you're going to have to fortify it with a wall surrounding. Without that, it's not going to exist. So the Gemara says that's the difference between a bor and a dos. A bor, you just dig a hole in the ground, and the water will retain. The integrity of the hole will retain. Masha'en came when it comes to a dos, in order for it to retain, so you have to actually build a wall within the hole that you excavated. And so what? Stay tuned. I'm gonna get to that point in just a second. Just let me first read the Gemara one more time, because the next lines of the Gemara are just repetition. Yasev Ravashi veKakashilei. It's repetition, by the way, but different Amoraim are having the discussion, and for reasons which I'm sure there's a good explanation. The Gemara quotes this discussion again, even though this discussion is exact parallel of what we just saw. Yasev Ravashi veKakashilei Hanabor Hanadus. Bor and dus are the same thing. Amrei Marka. And in the discussion, the Gemara quotes the same braisa. It's the same thing, meaning they're basically the same idea. They're a hole in the ground to support the water. When it comes to a pit, you just simply need to dig, and that's it. When it comes to a dus, the ground is so soft that you have to build a wall around it. Okay, good. So now we know there's a structural difference between a bor and a dos. But now the Gemara didn't finish the sentence, which is, and so what? Meaning, okay, that's good. But now, why does the Mishnah need to mention both? So here the Rashbam picks up where the Gemara just assumes that we're gonna be able to figure it out. Well, the good news is that we don't have to think that hard. I have the Rashbam, so the Rashbam spells it out. Look at the last Rashbam on the Amud. Okay, so just explaining that the dus is where you're digging into the ground, it's soft ground, and therefore you have to build a building around it. And therefore writes the Rashbam. Itanabor. Let's say the Mishnah only would have given the example of a pit. Hava mina hani mili bor shuhu bechafira. Avadushu bebinyan ke'ina baishu harehu bechlal bais. Beautiful. If the Mishnah only would have said bor, I would have thought as follows. Look, it's a hole in the ground. But functionally, it's not for residential purposes. It's separate from the house. The house is for residents, and the hole in the ground is still in order to store water. That's two different functions. When I sell the house, I'm only selling the house, and the pit's not included. But what about a dos? Had the Mishnah not written the word dus, I would have thought it's including the sale of the house. Why? Because it's building. Meaning just like the house is building, in order to have a house, I have to build it. So too, a dus is also building. And I could have made the argument that house and dus are one and the same. If I may give an analogy, I know in Florida we don't know from such things, but you remember the good old days when we lived in the Northeast and we all had what was called a basement, right? No one's going to make the argument that the basement is something different than the house. Obviously, the basement is part and parcel of the house. Why? Because in order to build a basement, you dug a hole in the ground and you build walls around. In other words, a basement. Clearly, it's part of the house. So without the Mishnah telling me dus is separate entity, you could have made an argument that basically, what's a dus? It's a basement. It's part of the house. That's the argument you could have made. So, and obviously, you can't make that argument because it's not for the purposes of living, the basement is. It's for the purposes of just simply storing water. Let's go the other direction. Now, if the Mishnah only would have written dos, I would have said, you know what? It's a separate entity. I built walls around it. It's basically its own separate entity. However, ava bor, but if it's just a hole in the ground, lo chashiv, it's not that significant. V'libato gabe bias. And therefore, I would have considered that maybe just a hole in the ground is totally subordinate to the house, and it's therefore including the sale of the house. So tzricha. That's why they're both necessary. So the Rashbam beautifully picks up where the Gemara leaves us off, and that is, now that we know that there's a structural difference between a bor and a dus, what is the reason the Mishnah needs to write both? So the Rashbam just gave us the reason, what I would have thought had the Mishnah only written one, not the other. Okay.
They're not a spring or a well.
No, right, correct. In other words, they're both used to hold water. But you're right. It's not its own spring.
And with all due respect, everybody, I think it's correct to think Alex is from the Midwest.
A Detroit, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You had basement. You had basements in Detroit.
The analogy is very good. Yeah. To the basement, because yeah, it always used to get flooded. You
know? Right, right, right. Your basement turned into a dus. Okay. Very good. All right. Tzarich likachlo derech divrei Rabbi Akiva chachamim amar ein tzarich lechulei. We are now at the point of the Mishnah, the machlokes between Rabbi Akiva and the chachamim. Now look, we're going to give the explanation of the Mishnah. Meaning, and the explanation of the Mishnah really beautifully covers both sides of the Mishnah. Where you sell a house, retaining the pit for yourself, or keep the house and sell the pit. And does the seller or do you need to buy for yourself an access point? So again, as Alex pointed out, the Mishnah flipped in terms of whether you're selling the house, retaining the pit, or whether or not you're selling the pit. But the Gemara is going to give the explanation. And it's really the best explanation. Now, what we are going to do over the course of the remaining part of today's daf is we're going to be a little bit argumentative, and we're going to try to give other explanations of the Mishnah. But when all said and done, this is really the explanation of the Mishnah. And that is, my love, the Hakamiflagi, the Gemara says, presumably, this could be the very easiest way to explain the Mishnah. The Rabbi Kiva Sever, Mocher Bayin Yafa Mocher, Rabban Sever, Mocher Bayin Ra Mocher. Look, you're a seller and you're selling something. Generally speaking, what's your disposition? This is your disposition, which is that you are, generally speaking, a very giving individual. And what's included in the sale, everything? Or is the seller somebody who is of a generally stingy disposition, and therefore it's not included? If I may, the best way I can describe this is basically the batteries are included or batteries are not included. Okay, now, the right when you're buying an right, correct. Right. Well, so when you're buying an electronic product, and so you'd love to think that the batteries are included, but in other words, from the mocher standpoint. Okay, I understand nowadays in our modern world it's really the manufacturer, whether he's going to include the batteries or not. But basically, does he include the batteries or does he not include the batteries? And now, it is a funny way to explain the machlokas in the following sense. We are basically looking about the general disposition of people. There is no general disposition of people. Everybody's different. Some people are very generous. Some people are very miserly. Now, in terms of where we should be, in other words, if we're addressing just you and me, where should we be on this on the spectrum? So we should be in the middle. Now, I'm not saying anything new. I'm just quoting the Rambam. Rambam says that, generally speaking, on the midah of should I be overly generous, should I be overly miserly, the Rambam says no. No and no. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Deos that you should be right in the middle. Be somewhat generous, but don't be overly generous. You don't want to give away everything, but you do want to give things away. So it is a little bit strange that we are looking to paint a very broad stroke in terms of what is the general disposition of the seller. Is he selling with a good eye? Or is he selling with a stingy, miserly eye?
That's, but in terms of the seller, you go with Rabbeinu.
Well, in terms of who do we follow? We follow like Rabbi Akiva, which in of itself is interesting, because he's arguing with the Chachamim, and generally speaking, the rule is right. Rabbi Akiva mechaver v'lo mechaverav. That's going to come up. We're going to discuss that tomorrow. Yeah. Right. Right.
It's not really a question of the person's position, more what
the general expectation is. Agreed. So look, I mean, it really does beautifully explain both sides of the Mishnah. I just, I'm making the obvious point that, people are different, and not every person is the same. And yes, what we are trying to do in this explanation is paint a very broad brooch, very broad strokes in terms of how sellers generally behave. Okay, now, once we say this, by the way, the Mishnah works out beautifully, doesn't it? Meaning, look at, let's go to the first case in the Mishnah, right? I'm selling a house, and now I'm retaining the subterranean pit underneath the house for myself. Okay, did I sell the entire house, including the point, including my right of access? Did I sell it all? So Rabbi Akiva says, sure you did, because when you sell generously. And included in that sale is your right of access as well. Meaning, I'm selling you everything. You get the entire house. I can't even walk back into my own house because I sold that to you. And now if I want to walk back into my house, I'm going to have to buy that right. That's Rabbi Akiva. Let's go in the other direction. Let's say I sell the pit. I sell the pit to somebody that's underneath my house. Did I sell the right of access? So again, Rabbi Akiva will tell you, well, look, how do people normally behave when selling? Generally, people are favorable to the buyer. If I'm selling you a pit, what good is that pit if you don't have a right of access to get there? Rabbi Akiva therefore says that included in that sale is also going to be the right of access as well. So it explains Rabbi Akiva on both sides of the Mishnah beautifully. And the Chachamim as well, just spell it out. According to the Chachamim, a person sells with a miserly disposition. So therefore, when you're selling somebody your house and you're retaining the pit for yourself, of course you're also going to retain a right of access. Meaning, I need to get into that pit. And therefore, I'm not selling you all the house. I'm retaining for myself the right of access. Let's go in the other direction. Let's say I sell somebody the pit. According to the Chachamim, I and Rahu Mocher, and therefore I'm selling you the pit, and that's all you get. You're just getting the pit. Oh, it's in my house. Oh, you need to walk through my house in order to get there. That's a you problem. Meaning, because the only thing I sold you was I sold you the pit, and that's it. So you see now that this seems to be just a beautiful way to explain the Mishnah. And the Gemara says, in fact, it's so beautiful. Continuing now in the Gemara, Udika'amar Nami Ba'ama. Now, generally, you'll find throughout Shas that we're going to say this over, this machlok is over. That according to Rabbi Akiva, a person sells buying Yafe. And according to Rabbi the Chachamim, a person sells buying Ra'a. So Rabbi Akiva, Tami, Damar, Mocher, buying Yafe, Mocher, Mei Hacha. Where's the source for this machlokes? Our Mishnah, Baba Basra, Daf, Samach Dalet. So anytime you hear this debate between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim, whether you sell Ba'in Yafa or whether you sell Ba'in Ra'a, so with Gemara saying it, the Gemara saying is, where is the main point of contention? Where is the prime location, the primary source of this debate? So Baba Basra, Daf, Samach Dalet. Okay. Parenthetically, where's another example where we find this debate? So I'm going to say this pretty often for the remainder of today's daf, and that is a Mishnah that we saw earlier back in Cheskas Abatim. So let's say I sell you a tree within my property. So did I sell you the tree, but only the tree, but not the ground underneath, or did I sell you the tree with the ground underneath? So we saw that to be a machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim. Rabbi Akiva says, I sold you the tree and the ground underneath. In the event that the tree dies, you have the right to plant again. According to the Chachamim, no. And when I sell you the tree, I only sold you the tree. You only have a right to this particular tree. When this tree dies, that's it. You're done. So again, now the discussion is exactly the same. Rabbi Akiva says that you're mocher b'ayin yafe, and the Chachamim say that when you're mocher b'ayin ra. And again, that machlokas parallels our machlokas, and this is the prime source. All right, that's what we have right now. And like I said before introducing us to this svara, it's really the best svara. And it's really the easiest way to explain the machlokes, Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim. What the Gemara is going to do for the remainder of today's daf is just try to be a little bit argumentative. And what we're going to try to do over the course of today, the remaining part of today, is try to give other ways to suggest how to understand the machlokes, Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim, so that it's not necessarily about the mocher selling buying ra'a or buying yafe. Dilma. Sorry, I skipped one word. Mimai. So we're four lines down on Samach Dalam and Beis, and the Gemara now is going to give perhaps a different way to present it. How do I know? Dilma, perhaps. Rabbi Kiva Savar Ein Adam Rotze Shiitei Ma'osav V'Yidrasu Acherim. Maybe the svar behind Rabbi Kiva is the following. Let's look from the buyer's perspective. The buyer pays money. Okay. And when you are giving up money, so there's an expectation of what do I get for my money? So I'm going to give money only so that other people can walk through my property. Meaning I just bought for myself a house. You know what I like about my house? I like my privacy. I like the fact that it's my house and nobody walks through my house. So you mean to tell me that I spent all this money on my house and then people are just going to walk through? That's just simply an unfair expectation when I spend money in my house. V'rabbanan savri ein adam rotze shiito maos v'yafrach ba'avir. And according to the Chachamim will say no. A person doesn't take money only so that he'll be able to float in the air. Meaning that from the perspective of the seller, I sold my house but I retained the pit for myself. And now, how do you expect me to get to my pit? You want me to float in the air? Meaning, isn't it a fair expectation to say that, look, as long as I'm retaining the pit for myself, Don't you think that I'm also going to retain a point of access as well? And so, maybe what the Gemara is now is arguing is that this debate between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim have nothing to do with whether or not you sell with Ayin Yaf or Ayin Ra, but it has to do with just simple expectations when a person buying a house. So again, from the perspective of Rabbi Akiva, I'm buying a house, I'm paying good money for it, I'm buying my privacy. I don't want people to walk in and out of my house. It's just simply not it's not a fair expectation if I'm buying a house. So we could say that that's a general expectation of a buyer of a house. And from the Chachamim standpoint, look, we know that I'm retaining the pit for myself. How do you think I'm getting into my pit? You think I'm just going to somehow float through the air? And even if I'm floating through the air, I gotta go through your property. But in other words, there is no normal, natural way for me to get through my pit other than the house. So of course I'm retaining a point of access. So over here, it could just simply be a question of general expectations in the sale of a house, having nothing to do with general disposition of a seller, whether a seller sells buying yafer or buying raw.
If there's anybody trespassing, but if you pay,
it's okay.
Well, not if
you pay, it's okay. Yeah, meaning the other person has to. Agreed, but in other words, the other person has to accept the money. Meaning.
I understand, but the idea that he doesn't want anybody going through his house.
Right.
But if you pay, it's okay.
He doesn't necessarily say that.
Right.
That's what he wants, no? He wants him to pay for the divide of
that. Maybe he won't accept the money at all. Maybe I don't want. And I know it's meaning. And you're right. In other words, it becomes extraordinarily strange because we knew at the time of the sale that I retained the pit.
Before that, like you say, you have to pay for the right of pay.
Rabbi Kiva always says you have to. In other words, right. Rabbi Kiva says you have to pay. And now what we're doing is just trying to understand why. Meaning, what was part
of the spoiler that he doesn't want people to his house?
Yeah.
If I pay, it's okay. But if
I okay, I do hear your point. But okay, the Gemara is just again what the Gemara is trying to do is look at the transaction from a different standpoint, not general disposition, but expectations of both the buyer and the seller. So the Gemara says, okay, ve'alami seifa. So the Gemara says that's fine. You want to give that explanation? Fine. But go on to the next case of the Mishnah. The next case of the Mishnah is the sale of a pit. In other words, it's my house, it's my pit, and I'm selling the pit to somebody else. So the Gemara says that in the second case of the Mishnah, again, the easiest way to explain that second case of the Mishnah is general disposition of the seller. Is the seller selling with generosity, or is he selling with miserliness? According to Rabbi Akiva, you're generous, right? And that means that if I'm selling the pit, I'm also selling the access. What good is it a pit if I don't have if he doesn't have access to it as well? That was included in the sale. Batteries included. And according to the Chachamim, no. I sold him a pit, that's all I sold him. He wants to get there. He's got to figure out a way to get there. Either he'll figure out a way, which again, I don't know what that means, or he'll pay me. So again, it seems like this explanation of Ayin Yafa, Ayin Ra seems to be the best way to explain it. And again, the Gemara says, now the Bach over here, basically the Bach inserts an entire line, but I'll leave the Bach out. Anyway, Dilma Bahai Pligi. The Gemara says again, not necessarily. We could give another explanation. The other explanation will go somewhat like this. Rabbi Kiva Savre Baso Daita Delokea Chazlinan, Rabbanan Savre Baso Daita Demoche Chazlinan. Look. In every transaction, so you have competing, not every transaction, but in most transactions, you have competing interests. You have the interests of the buyer and you have the interests of the seller. And they don't necessarily agree with one another. And so basically what we could suggest over here is that the Machlokas Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim of our Mishnah is that understood that in a transaction you have competing interests, and whose interests do we favor? And maybe the Machlokas over here is not the general disposition of the seller when he sells, whether he sells buying Yaf or buying Ra. In other words, let's assume that no. That when the seller sells, he's interested in himself. He has self-interest. And when the buyer buys, he also has self-interest. So over here, as a good example, I'm selling a pit underneath my ground to somebody. And now, from my standpoint, from the seller's standpoint, that's all I want to sell him. I don't want to sell him anything else, and I don't want to sell him the point of access. Whereas from the buyer's standpoint, what's his interest in the sale? His interest in the sale is not only getting the pit that's subterranean to the property, but he also wants a way to get there. So we have now competing interests in the sale. And now the question is, who do we favor? And Rabbi Akiva will say, well, I'm going to favor the buyer's interest. And the Chachamim say that I'm going to be favoring the seller's interest. And that could be another very plausible way to explain the Machlokas in the Mishnah, not using the Svara of whether the Mocher is selling Ba'ayin Yafa or Ba'ayin Ra.
But why would they favor one over the other?
Huh?
Why would they favor one over the other? There's got to be a reason.
Agreed. Meaning, right. To go, right. In other words, you want to now dig deeper into this.
The Makor seems to be the Ayin Yafi, Ayin Yafi.
Not necessarily. No. The Gemara, no. In this explanation, not necessarily. No, meaning, we're saying that the seller's standpoint, according to both Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim, is I'm only selling the pit. That's it. And that's his interest. And the buyer's interest is, what good is the pit without me getting in? So that's the buyer's interest. So it's not that the mocher is selling with generosity. It's that basically we know he only wants to sell the pit, but from the buyer's standpoint, I need a point of access. So it's so we are just simply siding with the interest of the buyer over that of the seller. Okay, it's a different way to look at the same machlokas.
Are the two transactions simultaneously?
It's one transaction. Meaning he's selling the pit. Is he also selling a right of access to it as well? Again, machlokas. And again, now what we're doing is we're playing, not playing, but we're offering different svaras in terms of how to understand the machlokas.
In follow-up to Danny's question regarding the halacha, it seems like you're deciding the halacha based on the behavior of people rather than what Hashem wants us to do.
No, we are.
Where is the source of the Torah that says you can
right.
do this or that?
Okay, so good. So let me remind you, this is Baba Basra, and the Rambam writes in the very beginning of Baba Basra, a lot of Baba Basra is svara, meaning it's rationale, meaning there's not going to be a source. We're not going
to
find a source in the Torah. Right, correct. And then the Chachamim now are debating this issue about where people stand in terms of a sale. And it's so interesting from our perspective, meaning we have a machlokas in the Mishnah between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim. And now the Gemara, and you see, it's so clear in terms of the need of the writing of a Gemara. Now the Gemara is saying, okay, now I know the machlokas, what's behind the machlokas? What's the underpinning of the machlokas? So we have now either Ayin Yafa or Ayin Ra, that's one possibility. We have another possibility of expectations of various transactions. We have now a third possibility of, in other words, competing interests and who do we favor in competing interests. So we have a number of svaras that the Gemara is kicking around in terms of what is the explanation of the Mishnah.
What people do before Rabbi Akiva.
Okay, good. What did they do before Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim, and what did they do before the Gemara gave us all these svaras? You're right. Okay. It's very good. Okay. Okay. Ve'ela meha. So the Gemara says, okay. So now, once again, we're looking now for the primary source in Mishnayos that describes Ayin Yafa versus Ayin Ra. Now, again, our Mishnah could have been a source. Like I said already a couple times, our Mishnah would be a very good source. It just happens to be that there are other plausible ways to explain our Mishnah. So where do we see this clear cut? Unequivocal that Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim are arguing about Ayin Yafa versus Ayin Ra. So the Gemara says, "Ela meha." So maybe it's coming from the following Mishnah: Lo esabor v'lo esagas v'lo esa shavach bein charavin bein yeshuvin v'tzarich likach lo derech divrei Rabbi Kiva. This is an upcoming Mishnah. The Mishnah is basically dealing with the same issue that we're dealing with over here, and that is the question of the selling of a field. And what is included and what is not included in the sale of a field? Not the pit, not the wine press, not the dove coat. Okay, in other words, various other structures in the field, anything other than the field that you're working. They are, generally speaking, not included in the sale. What about, and that means that the seller retains these items for himself. What about a path to get to these items? Same machlokas, Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim, that we have here on Samach Dalet. We're going to see later on Daf Ayin Aleph. And so according to Rabbi Kiva, Tzarech Likach Lo Derech, so now that you, the seller, have retained these items, the pit, the wine press, etc., etc., so you want to get there, you got to pay. And Chachamim Omrim Eino Tzarech. And the Chachamim say you don't have to pay. So again, a debate between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim. And the Gemara's question is really good. Hasulamali. Okay. We already had the Mishnah back on Samach Dalet, meaning today's Daf. So later on Daf Ayin Aleph, what is the need to go over the same machlokas again? We know that already. El Alav, Hakamash Malan, Rabbi Kiva Savra Mocher, Bain Yafa Mocher, V'Rabbanan Savra Mocher, Bain Ra Mocher. So the Gemara says, okay, good. And you know what's happening? The same thing is happening, where the Mishnah is there to teach us that it's a general debate regarding disposition of the seller. So the Gemara says, the Gemara says, maybe no. Maybe it's not a superfluous Mishnah. Maybe the Mishnah by Sada is absolutely necessary even after having learned the Mishnah regarding bias. Look, when it comes to a house, again, what's the purpose of a house? Privacy. Avosade imalo. There's no point of privacy in the field. The field is an open area. And so therefore, you could have made the argument that even if we had the machlokas here regarding bias by field, everyone's going to agree. I don't have to buy a right to go into a field. I'm not violating anyone's privacy by going into someone else's field. So lo. So the Gemara says, and by a field, I don't want anyone walking in my field. Why not? Because when they're treading on my field, they're ruining my field. But when people walk through my house, are they ruining my house? So the Gemara says, so you're not ruining a house when it comes to the when people are walking through. So again, the two Mishnayos are not superfluous, they're both necessary. So the Gemara says, okay, well, let's say now from the end of that Mishnah, let's say I sell the shovach, the boar, to somebody else. So does he need to also buy access to get to that, to those places in the field? So Rabbi Kiva Amar Eino Tzarech Likach Lo Derech V'Chachamim Amar Tzarech Hasu Ulam Ali. Again, at that point now, the second half of the Mishnah 9 Aleph is totally superfluous. So Hainu Hach Elalash Hakamash Malan Do Rabbi Kiva Savra Mocher Ba'ayin Yafa Mocher V'Rabban Savra Mocher Ba'ayin Ra Mocher Shema Mina. So the Gemara says, okay, so now we could safely conclude that by virtue of the fact that the Mishnah is saying it on Samach Dalet, the Mishnah is saying it again on 9 Aleph, and even though you can make arguments in terms of why they're both Mishnahs are necessary, but when the Mishnah then goes and repeats for the last time that, you know, if I saw somebody a pit in my field, so Rabbi Kiva says he doesn't have to buy a right of access, but Chachamim say he does. So clearly at that point in time, what the Mishnahs are trying to hammer home is that there's a general debate between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim what the disposition of a seller is. Is he selling with a generous eye, or is he selling with a stingy eye? Okay, Adkan.